So now if we could have Ginny and Annette and Brenda come up and take these three chairs that are empty on the table. If you have a last-minute question, we're going to get to as many of these as we can, but I know that we've got 20 minutes. And, yeah, bring it up. Bring it up. Bring it up now and put it in the basket. And we'll get to as many of these as we can. So to make this work, we'll just have one person answer each question. Because otherwise, we'd never get through it in 20 minutes. So, so I think what I'll do, I'm just going to hand you each one so that you can read the question and then give your answer, because there aren't enough microphones for me to have one.
All right. Okay, this one said, can someone go through the 12 steps while eating? My name's Brenda. I'm a food addict. My experience is this time coming back from relapse that I had, and I said, shared this the other night. Food isn't my problem. Food is my solution. My problem is I don't know how to face life as it comes at me. And so coming back from relapse, and I shared this Friday night, I came back in 2005 and I was at over 400 pounds. I couldn't surrender all of the food at once. I had to get deeply honest and be honest about what I was willing to do and then shift my focus to the steps. And so I started with giving up sugar. Was I still overeating? Yes, I was. But the solution is in the steps. And so what happened was, because food is my knee-jerk solution, I needed practice using the steps as my new solution so that I could surrender more and more of the food and more of this destructive food behavior. So, you know, I've heard that before. Can people be compulsively overeating or whatever and still work the steps? My experience was that I started where I could and surrendered what I could and then started working the steps, because the solution is in the steps, not in a food plan. Thanks.
I love my question. It's perfect. Do you have to do all the parts of service? Don't like to speak, am better as a worker bee. You do not know how many times I told myself, I'm a worker bee, I am not a leader. And yet here I am. And here I am. My husband, when early on in our marriage, he was into astrology, and he said, well, you're supposed to be, you should be a leader. And I looked at him, I said, are you crazy? No, I don't think so. didn't think so. But what my solution or my, what I have to offer is we don't know what service our higher power is going to call us to. And no, you don't have to do all the levels of service. If, you know, if your higher power doesn't want that for you, then you won't. But if, it's just stay open to what your higher power has in mind. A while back, I coined a phrase, don't set limits on God. And when I hear myself say, I always, I never, you know, I'm like, uh-oh, I'm boxing myself in again. Don't set limits on God. And by not setting limits on God and somehow being nudged here and there, I mean, you go to a meeting, hear about service, make it sound so good, end up as a convention chair. I mean, not convention chair, blah, no. Convention. Convention treasurer. On the other hand, who knows, you know. Convention treasurer, you know, which worked. And then I just set that aside. And then, you know, the idea, oh, and then I decided to be a 12-step within chair because I thought that sounded pretty interesting. And then some it was like region chair, and I'm like, I mean, region rep, and I'm like, well, I suppose. And one day somebody says, like, have you been to World? I'm like, no. She goes, you should do it. Do it. Next thing I know, I'm at World Service, you know, and just baby steps, just one thing at a time, nudging me along. Sometimes doing things that I had no idea I was going to be doing and finding out that I could do it. So my answer is stay open to what your higher power has and see what happens. And you don't have to worry about whether you can lead or not at this point in time. Just work the steps, use the program, and see what happens. Life is an adventure. Thank you.
Okay, this one has two questions, so I'm going to pick one. The one I like best. How have you dealt with your other addictions, if any? So I'm a compulsive person. I have many addictions. Not shopping. I don't like shopping. But I still work with trying to figure out money. I hardly ever go to a real store. I go to Goodwill to buy things because I keep thinking, by God's grace and God's time, I will weigh what my driver's license says I do. So I don't want to spend a lot of money on clothes I'm not going to wear for very long. So I give up my addictions one day at a time, just giving them over to God over and over and over. I have been blessed by an awesome husband that I treated very, very badly for many years before coming into program. Everything was his fault. I can remember one day walking out, was going out the door, and something had come up, and I thought in my head, oh, Frank. And it dawned on me that whatever it was that happened, he wasn't even there. It was always his fault. And so when I came into program and I started working through the steps, and this is probably off the topic, but I have to tell you this. I was working my fourth step. I was answering all the questions in the 12 and 12. And I would go to bed every night and I'd write in the journal. And one day finally, I mean, doing this day after day after day, one day he finally says to me, what is it that you're doing when you're going to bed? And I said, I'm currently working on my fourth step right now, and I'm answering questions in the 12 and 12. And right now I'm answering the question, how have you sought to control your family or your husband and your children or something like that? And he says to me very, very straight-faced, oh, honey, you don't have time to write all of that. And honestly, that was the truth. Manipulation, guilt, all those different things were what I did to control my family, my situations. So that was a true addiction that I give up every day. I don't, what often is in my head does not always come out of my mouth, and that's new for me. Pause, wait, think, pray. And we were sitting at dinner one time, and he said something I didn't agree with. And then the family's all around, big, huge table. And we sat at opposite. And he said something, and I just looked, kind of like, you know, the look. Everybody knows the look. If you're married. And he says, what? And I says, nothing. He says, I know the look. What are you thinking? I was like, doesn't matter. I get credit for not saying it. Give credit where credit is due.
Okay, my question is, what is the difference between abstinence and a plan of eating? In the our invitation to you, and this is a little pocket reference for that. Now I got to find it again. Okay, in OA, abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. So that's abstinence, is refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. A plan of eating is a tool to help you gain and maintain abstinence. So a plan of eating is about, okay, what do I eat, when do I eat it, and where do I eat it? You know, do I eat it in the middle of the morning standing up at my kitchen counter? Probably not. But does it mean that at breakfast I sit down at the table, I pray, I look at my healthy meal, and I eat my meal? That's the plan of eating, which helps me to refrain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. So they're two different things. Back in the old days, abstinence used to be a tool. But it's more important than a tool. The tools are what we use in order to achieve and maintain abstinence.
My question is, how would you pick a sponsor? This reminded me of my first World Service Business Conference, and those of you who have been know that there are workshops there. And I went to a workshop, and the workshop presenter was one of the heaviest ladies I'd ever seen in my life. And me and my fairly new in recovery judgment didn't know why in the world they would ask a lady of that size to do a workshop. And then she began sharing, and she was probably between 300 and 400 pounds, but she had already lost 200. And then it occurred to me, recovery doesn't mean thin. You know, being in recovery doesn't mean thin. But she said something at that workshop that has stuck with me ever since. It was about sponsoring, and she said, if you can't find a sponsor who has what you want, find a sponsor who's breathing. Chances are you won't both be crazy at the same time. My problem is, someone pointed this out to me at one point. My first sponsor was an abstinent. And she said, well, Vicki, when you came in, you were suicidal. And I said, yes. And she said, was she? And I said, no. She had what I wanted. You know. But I can always pick somebody apart. If I don't want to get a sponsor, I can pick them apart because nobody's perfect. I just need to find somebody. Sponsorship isn't like marriage. If it doesn't work, either one of you can end it. And so it's just like, find somebody. Ask them. See if it works. You know, don't be so picky. I can't be picky. You know, but so that's I've had 17 sponsors. And I've learned something from all of them. Mm-hmm. From some of them, I've learned how I don't want to sponsor. Mm-hmm. But it was good because now I know how I don't want to. Now I know what didn't work for me, and so I won't do it when I sponsor. So even sponsors who only work for a week or two have taught me something. So I think how would I pick a sponsor? I just pick somebody and see if it works, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Hello. Okay, so when I got this question, I was going to call Ann back real fast because I got the same question as Brenda did. But then, as I looked at it, I thought, well, maybe I should answer it because maybe it's really important. So I'll ask you. You want me to answer the same question? Yes? Okay, because otherwise I would ask for another one. And it's an important question. Can people work all the steps if they are eating? And my answer is similar to Brenda. The bottom line is for me is that I put the food down when I started working the program. Was it perfect? Definitely not. My food plan changed over time. I learned along the way that some foods did not work for me. I learned what my alcoholic foods were along the way. So, you know, my solution was still the food. I have done the steps since then. So I have gained the abstinence and put the food down along the way. So do I think it's best to do it when I'm sober? Absolutely. But, you know, whatever works is, if you're going to do it, that's how I feel, is just do it. get it started. I have heard many people who have begun to use the tools and work the steps and then got abstinent. So I would never say, oh, no, you can't do it. Of course you can do it. You've got to do what's right, because just as Brenda said, our solution was food for so long. You know, I have to give myself a break. I would definitely give my sponsees a break. I know that the miracle will come as long as you hang around. So if you have to start with the food, go for it. That's all I have to say about that. So thank you.
Okay, how about a speed round? We have 6 minutes, so 1 minute apiece.
Okay,
ready to go.
I am an introvert, and I find myself resisting service, calls, sharing, etc. How do I get past that? While I am one of the biggest introverts there is, and you just do the next indicated thing, but you also respect the fact that you are an introvert. And the fact is I do not like to be on the phone. Still today, I will not hang on. People who want to need to talk to me know where I'm at a meeting, but I'm not going to pick up and hang on a phone with a sponsee who needs to talk 25 minutes about nonsense distraction. If you want to call me and talk for 5 minutes about some program work you've done, then I'll talk to you. But I still today don't do a lot of phone stuff. I'll meet you face to face, but I have learned in this program to respect the fact that I am an introvert. And I do a lot of service, but I'm an introvert, and I need downtime. And there are times I do not answer the phone if I cannot answer the phone, because I'm not the only recovering person out there. So if somebody can't get me on the phone, they know to call somebody else. That's what I have to say. Thanks.
For some reason, you gave me the one that starts with a net on it, so I think I'm supposed to answer this question. Can you recall what your list of 5 things you were willing to do were? And I struggle with that. I try to remember sometimes, but I know there are things. I would not take second helpings. I would not eat between meals. I don't remember. Those are the two that stick in my mind. I think those are the first two things I wrote down. But it's just like looking at what was I willing to do? And it's like, I don't know. Well, not eat any desserts. Although I was already doing that, so that must not have been it. But anyways, there was just, you know, maybe three or four things. I wish I could tell you all of them, but I just can't. Thank you.
Thank you. What a great question this is. Thank you so much. We didn't get to talk much about amends to ourselves in the Step 8 and 9 session. Can the panel speak on their experience with amends to ourselves? I'm sorry, just I can. 1 minute, quickly. So what I would like you to do every day is look in the mirror and look at yourself in the eyes and say, I love you. I love you just the way you are. God's not finished with me yet. But I am loved, and I love me. Because if we don't love ourselves, who's going to bother to go through the work of recovery for somebody they don't like? So loving ourselves is the best way to make amends to ourselves. And know that you can never, ever go back and change what has been. You can only go forward and make decisions every day to do the very best that you can, to be the best person that you can, to love yourself, to love others, be of service to others. While you're loving yourself, remember that it's not about me. It's about other people. Thanks.
My sponsor has asked me to come up with a Step 7 ritual to give God my shortcomings. Any ideas? I use the God can a lot. And, you know, writing whatever it is I was asking God to pry my fingers off of, I would write it down and put it in the God can. And, you know, sometimes I'd put it in day after day after day after day. But eventually, God was able to pry my fingers off of whatever it is. And my experience with step seven was that when I was working on letting go of a particular defect, that it was everywhere. I could not avoid it. I would come running into it, and then I'd turn and because I didn't want to deal with it, and it'd be right over there. So it got me to the point where I was ready to humbly ask God to remove my defects of character. And the other thing is about putting things in the God can, writing them on a piece of paper and burning them. Something that's like destroying that. And also looking at what's the asset. Because those defects of character are assets that went down the wrong path or got obsessive. So looking at what it could be, visualizing what you would do, how you could react instead. That's it.
How do we get more members involved in intergroup besides visiting the meetings and inviting them to an intergroup meeting and having announcing exciting things happening above the group level? My sponsor and I were talking about this a day or two ago about some people are fires, and there aren't that many of them. And some people will burn as long as they're close to a fire, and there are a lot of those. And I think if I'm a fire, I can't make somebody else be a fire. It's just who I am. So what I did when I was doing, I live too far from face-to-face meetings. I do phone meetings. When I was doing face-to-face meetings, a requirement for me to be a sponsor was you go with me to intergroup. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything, but you will go with me to intergroup. Now, more times than not, they would volunteer to do something. Yeah. But that was if you want me to sponsor you, you will go with me once a month to intergroup. And now, I sponsor by telephone, and I say, you will go to intergroup. I don't want to. I don't care. If you want me to stay your sponsor, you will go to intergroup. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything, but you'll get your butt in that meeting, and you will listen. So that I think it's a one-to-one thing, and I think those of us who are burning people have to be, we can't let go of the responsibility to kind of keep the fire going in those people who aren't.
Okay. So my question is, respond as if I'm your sponsee who has stopped working and calling you.
Okay.
What I have learned in program is that I can't fix you as much as I tried. I've learned in this program that some people aren't ready. Now, what I do, I will share, is that every one of my sponsees is on my email loop list on my daily share. And because we have easy access now to texting, I will ask the person, hi, how are you doing? I will no longer wait by the phone when they're supposed to call me. I have to let go. And for a controlling person, that's very difficult, but it's also a gift. More than one time this has happened, and sometimes a week later the person will text me and say, is my spot still available? Can I start calling you again? And I always take them back. I don't, fill in that spot immediately if somebody doesn't call me. But we have to work for this program. And a sponsor cannot make me abstinent. So that's it. Thank you.
Well, I'm not a fire. I guess I'm just a flame. Anyway.
Flame her. Flame her.
Thank you all. My name's Mike. I'm an abstaining, maintaining, compulsive overeater from Denver.
Hi, Michael.
Before we close, before we do anything else, this convention has been, we've been planning this thing for God knows how many years, and it's here and it's over, and now I can go home and sleep. However, as the committee, we would like to thank Annie H. for stepping up and doing the work as our convention chair. So, there, I'm done.
No, you're not. We have a wrap-up session still to do, so.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike, and thank you for the committee. And I wanted to thank you all for being here with us today, sharing your experience. Oh. Okay, so it's my turn. For sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us, because you have made this a very special experience for us all. So thank you so much. Thank you. Deep breaths will help you get your breath back if that ever happens to you. So, a couple of things. The sessions of all of the speakers, all of the panels, the opening today, everything has been recorded. And we're not selling a bit of it. However, it will be available to you on the oadenver.org website. Jim, one of our wonderful technology committee people, will be making sure that those are available, and we'll send a link along with the evaluation that we'll be sending out to everybody. We hope we have your email address. We think we do. At least that's one thing Eventbrite did for us. At least we got email addresses from everybody. But we have your email addresses, so we'll be sending that to you. A little bit of housekeeping. We do need these lanyards back and the name tag holders. So when we finish today, if you'll find one of the bags out by the tables, we'll be passing these on to the Utah. What is there?
Soaring.
Utah Soaring. I knew there was Soaring in there, but I think, is there another word? So the Utah Soaring Group will be hosting the Spring Assembly, so we'll be sending these on. Julie's back. Oh. I have a bag for you already, Julie. So, okay. So, well, yeah, come on up.
Thank you very much for your wonderful service. So, again, we are going to have the Assembly Convention in Utah, Salt Lake City, Arch to Recovery. We're very excited about it. Registration forms in the back. We hope we'll see you all there. Thank you.
I had that sitting there. So, we still have some literature back there. We still have New Year's. We still have some water and fruit. If you want to take some of that before you go. So for our final thing that we're going to do today, we're going to have... Oh, I guess I shouldn't have... Jerry! Thank you. So for the final thing that we're going to do today, we're going to circle up around the room, and I know that we're like, the first thing you want to do is grab the hands of the people that are on either side of you, but we're going to do something today where we're going to actually
link up.
So just try to stand next to the person that's next to you, and then so we're gonna link the room, and then we're going to say the OA promise. I put my hand in yours. So if you don't know the OA promise and you need a bookmark that has it on there, we have some bookmarks. So if you don't know the OA promise, see. Let go of those hands. Let go.
Before we start, can I say something about the
Does anybody need this? You guys, on your two friends, move around so we can make a big circle.
I just want to share something while we're circling up here that I heard at World Services last year that meant a lot to me and has been a real treat. The OA Promise, a lot of times it was called Roseanne's Prayer, and Roseanne never intended it to be a prayer. She wanted it to be a promise. And it's a promise to one another. Ideally recited, eyes open and looking at one another. And I discovered what a powerful experience it is to say this promise. It's, we're promising this person, we're giving this this thing to them. And so those of you that know the OA Promise, I encourage you to keep your eyes open and look around the room. You'll be delighted. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Oh, let's pray.
All right. Okay. I'm going to put my hand in yours because I can.
I'm sorry, I don't.
CJ.
CJ, I put my hand in yours because I can.
Brenda, I put my hand in yours because I care. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love.